They say Rabbi Akiva is the author of that statement in the Mishnah. And how are they going to prove it? So they're going to show where he voices that opinion. The Tanya. We've learned in Barais. It says, Abed ti abdun is called Havakonos, Asher Ovdu Shom Hagoyim. So it says, you shall completely destroy all the places where the Goyim have worshipped Avodah Zorah. Okay. Obviously, the pshat, as we would say, the simple meaning is what? What should we destroy? Should destroy their altars, right? We should destroy their asherahs if they have, they planted them. Remember what we said, the asherah is a tree that is used for idol worship, right? So that's what it means, that they are to be destroyed. But what the problem is as follows. They say, what Kol HaMakom is, all the places, really refers to. They said it's Bekelim Shenishdamshu Bahem Lavidis Kechovim HaKotzu B'Davya. They say the Torah is talking about different implements, vessels, articles is really what it is, that have been used for Avodah Zorah. Okay? So, Yochol Asawun Belo Gibarum. Now, maybe we will argue that they made, but they didn't finish them. Or Gimorum, they finished the articles, but Belo Heviyum, but they didn't bring them to where they're going to be worshipped. In other words, let's say to a place of worship. Heviyum below the Shtab Shubahem, or they did bring them, but still they never actually began worshipping them, right? So Yochel Yehu Asurim, so you're going to argue that these are prohibited? Talmud Lomar, this is why the Torah says then, Asher Ovdu Shom HaGoyim, where the idolaters worship, which means then the She'ein Asurid Achi Ovdu, which means that the idols do not become prohibited until the time that they're actually worshipped. So the Kan Omru, so from this, the sages say, Avodas Kechovim, Shel Oive Kechovim, Eina Asura Achate of the Eid, right? That the Avodah Zorah of an idolater is not prohibited until it's going to be worshipped. The Shel Yisrael Asura Miyad, but the idol of a Jew is immediately prohibited, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel, according to Rabbi Shmuel. So this is a complete contradiction to what the Mishnah had to say. So therefore, we have to assume that the Mishnah represents the view not of Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva Omer, he says, Chiluf HaDvarim, says just the opposite, right? Avodas Kechovim Shalevit Kechovim Asur Miyad, that the idol of a goy is prohibited immediately, but for Shal Yisrael, but an idol of a Jew is not prohibited until it's going to be worshipped. So we see then that the Mishnah represents the view of Rabbi Akiva as against to Rabbi Yishmael's opinion. He said just the opposite. Now, the next question is, what are Mekomos? Mekomos in Hebrew means places. So where does it say the word any instrument, any kalim, any article, right? Does it say that? So how do we derive that? So, Omar, one of the authorities said, the kalim shenishtam shubahem abirist kachovim hat chosim adabim. Says the Torah, in that verse, is talking about articles that were used for Avodah Zorah. So, Hamikom is ksiv, but doesn't the Torah say places? It doesn't mention articles. So he says, "Im eino inyan limikoymes, delay mitzray." If you cannot apply this to places, because places themselves were not prohibited, dichsiv, as it is written, Eloheihem al hehorim, their gods, or their idols, on the hills, on the mountains, below hehorim, Eloheihem, but the mountains themselves are not their gods. We had this previously also mentioned, where we said that the earth, right, mountains, these things are not prohibited, because what is prohibited is idols that they worship on them, but not the actual ground itself. So therefore he says, since we cannot apply it to the ground, to the places themselves, because the way we interpret the verse, it means that that they are not prohibited. So today, who in the next place, Nun Beis, Omid Aleph, he says, so in that case, apply it to something else. Apply it to what? The Kalim. To implements that were used for Avodah Zarah. Mekan Omru, so based on this interpretation, the sages said that Avodah Kechovim Shalevit Kechovim Eina Asura Ela Ashateyodein, right? That the idol of the goy is not prohibited until it's going to be worshipped, right? The Shal Yisrael Miyad, whereas that of the Jew is immediately prohibited. In other words, this would represent whose opinion? Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Yishmael? Rabbi Yishmael, obviously, that's his opinion, okay? So the Mishnah then represents the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and this latter statement that we just had represents the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. And the two of them keep on arguing all the time. Jerry, you had...
No, I'm going off. I'm going to say, are the vessels analogous to, let's say, mountains? For example, if the vessel is used for something to contain an idol, if the mountain is used for something to hold...
Right.
You know, it's not the idol itself.
Correct.
The vessel is the vessel.
Right, vessel is the vessel. The question is, do you make the comparison, or don't you make the comparison? Because we see there's a difference of opinion about that too, okay? All right. So now they say, right? So how can you tell me that we're talking about Kalim when it's not mentioned in the Torah? So Omar Krah, so we now take a look at another pasuk. What does the pasuk say? It says, "Asher atem yorshim oson es Eloheihem." This is actually a continuation of the pasuk that started with, "Adei tiyadun es kol hakomos," right? "Asher odu shem hagoyim," right? You shall destroy all these different places. That's the Torah, right? Where the idolaters worship, right? Asher atem yorshim oson es Eloheihem, whose idols, literally, you inherit from them, or whose idols, you're supposed to destroy their idols and so on. So, makish Eloheihem lekelim, right? So therefore we can compare the word Eloheihem, their idols, to kelim that they use for them, right? Sheyaldu, right? So just as Caleb are not prohibited until they are worshipped, so our fellow Hehem, Name Achiyavdu. So therefore, their idols too are not prohibited until they are worshipped. Okay? So, in other words, the idol of the Goy, naturally, this is Rabbi Yishmael's opinion, right? Are not prohibited until it is put to use for Abedazam. That's his twice the same. Okay? Rabbi Akiva. Now, how about Rabbi Akiva, who said, punk the opposite, right? He said, the loy makish, He doesn't accept that comparison. Or Malachor, because his argument is as follows. They have the word Es, Asher Atem, Yoshim, Osam, Es Eloheihem. In other words, he says, if the Pasuk had said, Asher Atem, Yoshim, okay, Es Eloheihem, or Yoshim, Osam, Eloheihem, or something like that. But why is the word Es thrown in over here? So the answer is, it's an order of the Hafsik. It breaks the analogy. So you cannot use the analogy. That's what he said. Okay? This was quoted previously, many, many pages back. But here's the source again that they are quoting for it. So, in other words, what would be the conclusion then? The conclusion, according to Rabbi Akiva, is that, well, as we said, if it's the idol of a goy, then automatically it's prohibited. But if it's the idol of a Jew, then it's not until it's actually worshipped. So we have these two different opinions, right? Rabbi Yishmael, how about Rabbi Yishmael? It says, Ashkechon avedis kechovim, shal oived kechovim, de'ena surah chateyaveh. Says, we find that, on the basis of my interpretation, he says that an idol of an idol worshipper is not prohibited until it is worshipped. And the Yisrael, but not of a Jew, is that surah miyad, right? It's prohibited immediately. So menole, Savora, Minoli. So he says, how does Rabbi Yishmael derive this opinion of his? He says, Savorahu, he says, it's a logical conclusion. Why? If in the case of a goy, when does it become prohibited? Archetayoved, right? So, and only when it's going to be worshipped. So the Yisrael, so the Yisrael Asura Miyad, right? So therefore, a Jew's has to be prohibited immediately. So now they say, Emo the Yisrael Klal, Uchlal Bo. So maybe you'll argue that if it's the idol of a Jew, then definitely not. Why? So it says, Hashto Geniza Ba'aya, Suri Loi Mitzray. We learn another statement that the idol of the Jew, what has to happen with him? You have to bury it. In other words, once it's worshipped, then it has to be buried, father. So, certainly then, it should be prohibited immediately, according to Rabbi Yishmael. So we see, all right, to summarize then, Rabbi Yishmael says that the goy's idol, right, is not prohibited until it is worshipped, and a Jew's idol is prohibited immediately, mitzvah, right? So don't even have to ask the question that it has to be buried, right? Because it's prohibited immediately. Whereas, according to Rabbi Akiva, just the opposite, that the goy's idol is immediately prohibited the moment it's manufactured, or it's prohibited, whether it's been worshipped or not, whereas out of a Jew, it's not prohibited until it's going to be worshipped. At that point, then it becomes prohibited. So these are the two conflicting ideas that we have over here. Right. But maybe you want to argue as far as right? Maybe it should be the same also for a goy's idol, right? The Jew and a goy. So they come back to the story of the golden calf, where it's written, V'yeschatoschem, Asher Asisem, it's an eagle. Your sin in that you made the eagle, you made the golden calf. So what does that imply? Mishas Asiya Kom Lebechek. The moment that you made it, it's already prohibited. So whose point of view is this reinforcing? It's reinforcing Rabbi Yishmael's. So, Amon, maybe we can argue as follows. Hanei Mila, the verse that you just quoted me, what does it imply? It says, the Nekam Gavra Bechet. Okay. It means that a person, you know, who makes it as a Jew, of course, I mean, a Jew who makes an idol, automatically it's what? It's a sin. But it's Suri Loi Mitzuri, but maybe it is not prohibited even if it is a sin. It's a fine distinction between the two.
It's like just having an idol around.
Right.
Even if you don't,
right.
Have it as a decorative item.
Right.
Sort of like one that creates bonus.
Right,
right.
It shouldn't be there at all. It's a sin to have it. But to say that it's prohibited to have any hanor or anything like that, as long as it has not been worshipped. I mean, this would be the view that we have at this particular point. Yes, Jerry?
You know, it's kind of both arguments.
Right.
You could say the golden calf.
Yeah.
When they made the golden calf, you could see they were making it so they themselves could worship it.
Yes.
But what if a Jew was in the business of making idols to sell them?
Right.
To Goyim.
Right.
Then you could say that's not prohibited.
That's correct. I mean, according to Rabbi Akiva's interpretation, it's not prohibited. Rabbi Yishmael would say.
But if
you know, so right. Maybe the intent has to be ascertained too.
Right.
Maybe this is. You know, if he conceals it, then maybe his whatever he's doing is nefarious.
Right, right.
You know?
It's a good question, because of the Bible analysis. I mean, can a Jew be in the idol business? If you remember the story about Terach, Abraham's father, right? But, he was in the business of selling idols, and of course, what was the first great action of, act of rebellion on the part of Avraham Avinu, the fact that he smashed the idols. Famous story, going way back. Right. So, apparently, in the time of Rabbi Akiva, there were Jews also who were the idol manufacturing business. Today, I think, all these things are made in China. I mentioned a few weeks ago the breakfast table. So, I took a look at the Sukkot decorations in Michael's Sukkot. So they have one of the new decorations that they hung up on the wall. God's fine. Not the Aquaminium and so on and so forth. Very appropriate. The four species that they use for for sukkahs.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I take a look, and it says in Hebrew on the bottom over there, Totseret Sin, which means made in China.
Well, with a lot of the menorah, Hanukkah menorahs
are
made in China.
Well, what it is?
I think they can't.
They're probably making mezuzahs over there too.
Years ago, I was in Washington, and I was looking at these different things they were selling, and one of them was a Iwo Jima flag raising.
Yeah.
It over in Japan.
Okay. All right. So we see the argument continues over here. Okay. So Amar Kvor, so we have another pasuk. What does this pasuk says? says, Arur ha'ish, cursed is the man, Yaseh vessel maseicha, right? Who make a graven image or an idol or graven image, however you translate, you know, vessel maseicha. And what is the implication of this pasuk? That Bishas Asiyah, come Lebiora, right? But the moment that you make that idol, immediately you are to be cursed, right? So again, they say, Ema, but maybe I can argue that Hane Mila Lamekim Gavab Orur, right? Maybe it means that a person who doesn't deserves to be cursed, right? But it's Sure Loi Mitzera, but it still is not prohibited. So we need something else to reinforce the idea that, you know, it is prohibited. Namely, it's written over there, to avas Hashem ksiv. It's written that this is an abomination to God, right? So that would seem to clinch the case that an idol made by a Jew automatically is a no-no, right? It's prohibited. The Rabbi Akiva, who said that the idol of a Jew is permitted, right, until it's going to be worshipped. So what does he do with this pasuk that says that it is an abomination of, unto God, right? So he says, Dover ha-mevi b'dei t'weva. No, the meaning is that if you continue, you have an idol, then eventually what's going to be? Eventually you're going to continue and it's going to be an abomination to God. All right, so now they continue again. All right, let's analyze again the statement of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who says, Avodas kechovim shalevit kechovim dasur miyad minale. And how does Rabbi Akiva derive the fact that the idol of an idol worshiper is immediately prohibited? How does he derive it? So Omar Ullah, so Ullah says, he derives this from, it says, Omar Krov, Pasuk says, Pisile Eloheim Tisrafud Bo'esh. The idols of their gods, right, you are to burn in fire. Mishaposlo, for the minute that you made it into a pestle, in other words, the minute that you carved it out, Nase Eloa, right, it becomes an idol, and therefore it is to be burnt. Be'idoch, so let's get back to Rabbi Yishmael. What does he do with this pasuk? So he says, Ahumi bo'elei, he needs this pasuk for a different teaching. Dichetatone Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef interpreted this pasuk. Dichetatone Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef interpreted, he says, Menayin le'evet kechovim, sheposel eloa. How do we know that an idolater carves out his idol? Shenemar, pesile elohehem, right? Because the word pesil implies, you know, carving out an idol, and tisufin ba'esh, right? And you are to burn it in fire. So in other words, once it becomes worshipped, right, then in that case, according to Rabbi Yishmael, it is prohibited, but until it becomes Elohehem, until it becomes actually worshipped as an idol, worshipped as a god, in other words, right, then in that particular case, that for the goy, it's permitted yet at this particular point. Okay.
I have a little problem with this reason.
Yeah.
Because it's to me a little bit fallacious.
Yeah.
What did the Rabbani think the idols were made for?
Obviously, they were made for idolatry.
Knowing the culture,
of course.
Knowing their field about being
right.
What did they think?
In general, I mean, they were made for that. But remember, we did have an earlier Gemara, earlier Mishnah and Gemara, wherein they talk, for example, about you know, a statue. What do you do with the statue? Is the statue a statue of an idol, or is it simply meant as an adornment or something like that? So if the statue is only an adornment and not really worship, then in that particular case, you know, it's a different story.
I don't mean that very much. Can you tell me what's the word that was used in that Kermit? Is that also Esso?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Yes.
I see the
right.
Public, we're used to seeing public buildings, all kinds.
Right, right.
Referring to the Greek and Roman gods.
Of course.
It doesn't necessarily...
But we don't take it seriously.
It's
only an adornment.
It's not the
people
worshiping. It's sort of our
right,
work.
Right,
remember the classical illusion or whatever you want to call it. You know?
Remember the Mishnah speaking about the statue of Aphrodite in the bathhouse, right?
Right, right. That was cool. Yeah, that was the one. That's
right. Obviously, they were not worshiping Aphrodite when they took a bath over there.
Remember those beautiful public buildings?
Yeah.
That wall of the
right,
adornments.
Yeah. Right. Then we had another Mishnah in which they speak, for example, to see a statue of a king. Well, if he's holding a scepter or something like that, that's one thing. But particularly if he has a globe, you know, where it's, you know, he's the conqueror of the whole world or something like that. It is worshipped therefore that way. So that's different than simply making a statue of the king and let us stay over there. Right. Right, right. So obviously, you know, the rabbis were struggling with this particular problem. The very fact that, you know, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel are both great authorities, but normally we follow Rabbi Akiva's opinion. But that doesn't mean 100% of the time that we have to follow Rabbi Akiva. All right, so we'll continue the argument just for a couple of more lines, and we'll call it a night, okay? So, the question is, all right, so what do you do with the statement that if once the moment that a goy carves out idols, so automatically it's prohibited, right? Which we said, this is Rabbi Akiva's opinion, right? So the Edoch, so how about Rabbi Ishmael? Nafka Levin Ishmael, he offers a different interpretation. In accordance with the statement made by Shmuel, the Shmuel Rami. Shmuel said there's a contradiction. Ksiv le'sachmoid kesem zov aleihem. First of all, the pasuk says you shall not desire the silver or the gold upon the idol, right? Ksiv, then it's written v'lokach toloch and take it unto yourself. And so the pasuk reads. That's what the pasuk is. So he says the first part of the pasuk, not to covet it, right? And the second part, which says, and you will take it unto yourself. Obviously, again, you know, with pshat and drash, the two different things, you know. So he uses it in order to get the following drash, okay? It says, okay, son, how can you reconcile these two phrases in the same pasuk? It says, psalo le eloa le sachmo. It says, if you carved it out so that it should be an idol, right, then in that case, you should not covet it. But solo may aloha, but if it's carved out simply out of it, then you can take it to yourself. But that's not exactly what he's saying. I have to explain that, you know, the word the soul has all kinds of meanings. The most obvious meaning over here is really that he makes it possible. You know what we mean by making possible. That, you avoid it. You nullify it. Okay? So in other words, if the guy is still Eloha, right? He makes the idol for his God, then in that particular case it is prohibited. But the solo me aloha, in other words, he made it puzzle, he made it null and void, so that it's no longer an aloha, it's no longer an idol, then we'll look after law. Then in that particular case you can do whatever you want with it, you can have whatever profit and all use and so on that you want to make. Okay. So, because in Hebrew, I have to tell you, min has different meanings. We know it means from, but it also, you know, could be like not part of something like that, you see. Okay? So, in that particular case, you know, ne'eloa would mean that it's no longer an eloa, because he made it possible, which is the other right. So in that particular case, then the Jew is permitted to have some kind of use of it. So permitted to have hano from it. Rabbi Akiva, coming back to Rabbi Akiva, says, Ashkecha navaris kechov shalei kechovim da asura biyad. Says, we have found, in accordance with my interpretation, that the idol of an idol worshipper is immediately prohibited, but the Yisrael ad shetei aveid, right? But the idol of the Jew is not prohibited until it is going to be worshipped. Menalon, how do I derive that teaching? He says, I derive it from a teaching of another authority, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Krah. It's the opinion of Rav Yehuda, who interpreted the Pasuk as follows, says, Lissam Bas Sefer. That's in the Pasuk over there, Ruhr, Ha'ish, Hashem Yaseh, Pesel Bas Seichor, right? The question is the man who makes it. Lissam Bas Sefer. Lissam Bas Sefer. He put it, he did it secretly. Did it secret, right? So, ad sheyaseh lo devorim shebeseisa. In other words, until he does something that he does secretly, namely what? To worship. So that's the point where the Jew's idol becomes prohibited. Obviously, what is the stress upon the son Basesa? But the fact that he's ashamed to do it publicly, but privately, with the privacy of his own home, he'll do whatever he wants, okay, including worshiping an idol. Right. Pardon me. Yeah, Rivka with her father's idols and Trafim, right?
In the saddlebag.
Right. Right. Yeah.
She just couldn't completely.
Right.
Rashi says she took it from her father's
money. Yeah, right. Well, right, because Rashi wants to say that she did a good thing.
Here, she could have, but also nevertheless, wanted it as like a garden decoration when she got
remembrance
to Rome.
Oh,
I don't know. Maybe it's
remembrance.
But if Beverly says that she worships it, well, then
well, we don't know that she worships, but so.
No, I'm just saying, if
right,
using it as a
metaphors. Okay. The Edoch, now how about Rabbi Yishmael? What does he do with the Soma Sasser? He says, he requires this Pasuk with the Rabbi Yitzchak. In accordance with an opinion stated by Rabbi Yitzchak, the Allah Rabbi Yitzchak, Min Ayan Lavidis Kechol Mishal Yisrael Shetunagat. He said, how do we know that an idol of a Jew has to be buried? Shenamar, as it's written, with Psalm Basasar, you have to put it away in some secret place where it won't come to light anymore, right? The Idoch, how about getting back again to Rabbi Akiva? Say, Naftilei Midrash, how do you know, in other words, that you have to bury an idol if it's an idol of a Jew, right? So, Lafka David Rav Chisa, he derives it from Rav Chisa's opinion, all right? Omar Rav, who said the name of Rav, the Omar Rav Chisa, Omar Rav, Minayin, Lavedes Kechovim, Shoyisur, Shituda, Kazisa. How do we know, you know, according to the, that the idol of the Jew has to be buried? Shenemar, because there's a pasuk which says, Lo sital lecho ashero, called Eitz, Eitzel Mizbach, right? You are not to plant an ashero, you know, a tree for idol worship, as we've already said many times. Call Eitz any tree that is going to be worshipped. Eitzel Mizbach, next to the altar, of course, the altar of the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, or the altar of the sanctuary, right? Ma Mizbach, or Mizbeach, Toen Geniso. So, just as an altar, if it would be used for Aveda Zorah, right, has to be buried. So, Ap Asherah Toen Geniso, right? So likewise, the Asherah too has to be buried. In other words, has to be destroyed. The Idoch, so let's get back to Rabbi Yishmael. What does he do with this pasuk? Lo Zitalacha Asherah Kol Eitz, right? Eitz Tal Mizbach. So he says, Ahu Boile Kida Reish Lakas. He follows the opinion of Reish Lakas in the interpretation of this particular pasuk, the other Reish Lakas. As Reish Lakish said, "Kol Haman in Dayon she'eino Hogun." Whoever appoints a Dayon, a judge, who is unworthy of being a judge, like in unfortunately too many cases in America, right? So it's Ki'ilo Noteya Asherah B'Yisrael. It's as if he were planting an idolatrous tree in Israel. Shenemar, as it's written, Shoifzim, Shotrim, right? You are to appoint judges and police, Titen Lecho Bechol Shorecho, in all of your gates, in other words, or the gates of all the cities, with some clay, and right next to it, the Pasuk says, Lo Sital Lecho Asher Kol Eitz. So, in other words, the Shotrim, who are like idols, meaning that they are unworthy, right? They don't deserve to be. So it's like planting an idolatry. It's like planting an idol over there. Omar Ravashi, and Ravashi interpreting this pasuk says, "Mekom Talmidei Chachomim ki yilun ato esel mizbach." In other words, where there are Talmidei Chachamim, and you appoint a Dayan who is what? Who is not a Talmud Chachamim, you understand? So it's as if you planted it near the altar of God. Shenema Eitzel Mizbach. Okay. All right, we'll stop at this particular point tonight. My voice is on. So let's see, tonight is already the 29th of November, the year 2006. We are continuing now in Avodah Zorah, Daf Nun Beis, Omid Aleph 52A, and a little bit, roughly about maybe two-thirds of the way down. Okay, continuation from last week. Omar Ravashi said as follows, go down one more line. Boy Rav Humnuna. Okay. Go down one more line. Okay. It says Boy Rav Humnuna. Okay. So Rav Humnuna asked the following question. Okay. It says, Ritach Kali La Avodas Kechovim Mahu. Says, if you take some object that has been dented or damaged or something like that. Okay, let's say a goblet or something like that, okay? And wants to fix it. So what does he do? So Rashi says he heats it up in fire And then he takes a hammer and he bangs on it until he gets all the dents out. Okay? So this is how he explains the word ritach. Okay? So the question is as follows. Okay. Here you had, let's say, like a goblet, a plate, or something like that, that was dedicated to the service of an idol. Okay? Became damaged. And the person now fixes it up, right? Repairs it. Okay?
Who's repairing it now?
It could be a goy, it could be a Jew, right? But anyway, it was an idol, okay? It was used in the service of idols. In other words, it wasn't an idol itself. But as I say, it was some kind of an object that was used in the service of an idol, okay? So he wants to know, you know, mahu. Okay. Yeah. So what about it? So he says, avodas kechovim deman. So the question that the Gemara asks is, okay, the service of idolatry for what? If we say that we're talking about a goy whose idol it is, then in that particular case, vein le Rabbi Yishmael, vein le Rabbi Akiva, whether it's Rabbi Yishmael's opinion or Rabbi Akiva's opinion, both of them were busy arguing up above, but in this case they're both in agreement that what? That Misham Shei Avedis Kechov Nehem, that these are simply objects used in the service of idolatry, and Misham Shei Avedis Kechovim, right? And these objects that are used for idolatry, Ein Asurin, they are not prohibited Ad Shei Yovdu, until the point that they're actually used in service, okay?
In other words, you're talking about the object has dual use.
Right.
Until
it's actually used, right. It was used. Now, obviously, if you remember, we said that before, there's a possibility of making the idol null. Remember?
Yes.
So you make it puzzle, you make it null. So obviously, if there's a damage done over here, then in that particular case, we might say that it loses its sanctity, since it's not going to be used for Avodah Zarah, okay? So now, once he repairs it, the question is, so now what? Is it, again, to be considered like a new item, which you can do whatever you want with it until the point that it's going to be served or not? So he says that both Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva are in agreement that that's the case, okay? The yellow, however, what if it is Avedis Kechovim de Yisrael, right? It is the, you know, used in the service of an idol and it belonged to a Jew. This is the question. So what about it? So it's Al-Diba Namam. Then in accordance with whose opinion are we to say what we're supposed to do with it? Ilema. If we say that Al-Diba the Rabbi Akiva, that in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who said before that in the case of Avodas Kechovim of a Jew, right, an idol of a Jew, does not become prohibited until when? Until it is used to serve. So he says, if you follow his opinion, so he says, Hashtag, now and then in this particular case, he says, He Gufalo Mitzray, Archetiyove, right? An idol itself does not become prohibited until the time that it is going to be actually worshipped or put into service for idolatry. So, Misham Sheha Mibori. So, do I have to ask about something that is not an idol itself, but simply something that is used for idol worship? So, the Ella, so I have to come to the conclusion that maybe it's Al Diba de Rabbi Yishmael. It's in accordance with Rabbi Yishmael. The Omar Asura Miyad, who said that it's prohibited immediately, right? It's what we said before, you know, the difference of opinion between the two of them. So, my Mishamshin, Mimishamshin Yaminan, right? So he says, what about, you know, just these objects that are used for service but are not idols in themselves? We can learn from other that are also in use. So then Imam Shem come in, we learn from him. So he says, Ma, awesome, Achiyavdu. So just as in that case, it does not become prohibited until it's going to be worshipped. So Avhocha Achiyavdu. So likewise over here, until it is worshipped. I want to repeat again the distinction that they had made before. Okay. Rabbi Yishmael, he said that the Aveda Zorah of an idolater does not become prohibited until it is worshipped, right? Rabbi Akiva said, Punkt verkehrt, if it belongs to an idolater, it's immediately prohibited. And then, what about if it belonged to a Jew? So there, Rabbi Yishmael said, it's immediately prohibited. And Rabbi Akiva said, no, it doesn't become prohibited until it is put into service. So, since now we're asking about, you know, something that belongs to a Jew and is used for idolatry, right? So, if we follow Rabbi Akiva, who is very liberal, shall we say, as far as an idol, so there we said that he says that if it's the idol of a goy, then you know, then he says that it is not prohibited until it's going to be worshipped, right? So, if that's the case, but in a Jew, what did he say? It's immediately prohibited. So, what about something which is used in the service? What category does it fall in? So, according to Rabbi Yishmael, right, then in that particular case, the Omar Asura Miyad, who says that it's immediately prohibited. So, my Mishamshim, the Mishamshim Aminim, so what are you going to learn as far as, you know, these things that are used for service? So he says, Mahosam Achiyavdu, right? Just as over there, when does it become prohibited? It's when they are put into service, right? When they are actually worshipped, so Achiyavdu, right? So likewise over here, until they are put into service. Oh, dear, maybe Minogamar. Maybe we have to learn differently. We have to say, Mahi Asura Miyad, just as it is immediately prohibited, so Af Misham Shah Asura Miyad. Then any object which is used in idol worship is automatically immediately prohibited. So we don't know exactly how to determine, because of this, again, the split of opinion between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. So he says, my area, the Komi Boile, Ripach, right. What are you busy asking me about repairing? He says, Kli to Boile. Or, let's phrase it maybe a little bit different. My area, the Komi Boile, Ritach Kli. Why do you ask me a question about repairing an object? Tiboile, also, why don't you ask a question about if he actually made an idol? So, right now, I have to tell you, a little mixed up.
Tell me something.
Yes.
If
right.
You took something for repair.
Right.
And you were going to recycle it into a non idle object.
Right.
It would be prohibited. If you took something that was already part of a worship service, you repaired it and used it as a soup bowl.
Unless we say that.
Because it was worshipped previously.
Yeah, no. But what if we say that even though it was used that way before, but now that it has a dent, the owner decides that he can't use it for Aveda Zorah, so he gives up, as I say, he says, right now it's null and void as far as I'm concerned. In that case, it could be recycled for anything.
So you could recycle.
Right.
As long as the purpose
right.
changed.
Exactly.
Generally speaking, this has been, we've seen this trend
Now, looking back on all these various cases that they brought up,
yeah,
it's more or less this is that they're staying pretty much to the same principle.
Yes.
Then you see the principle forming, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Through all of this, you get an idea of when you may or when you may not, even though they argue about it, you seem to see where the decision is coming down.
Right. If it's actually used,
if it's
really
used,
it's
no good.
Sort of,
and
no good. Right.
Used,
exactly.
If
it hasn't been, then you might be able to find
it it's been spoiled.
One of the authorities will give you a heather.
Right.
You have to go to the right authority.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You're looking just to continue the fence.
Yeah.
And try to build around it.
Yes, right. Okay. All right. So, anyway, now maybe we have to take a different slant. Rav Hamnuna maybe is asking about something else. He says, Rav Hamnuna, Mishum, two more. Yeshono, Kamiboyele. Now, as we know, in ancient times, you know, as long as the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, and even for a long period afterwards, okay? People had to be very careful about tuma and tara. In other words, tuma means, you know, that something had made it impure, and tara means, you know, that's the opposite of tuma. Okay? So, now let's take a look and see. Here we have, we're dealing with an object again, right? We said the shabshin, you know, something that is used, okay?
Is this comparable to asur and the other word
mutter? Yes, but they're really used in different connections.
Okay.
In other words, mutor and asur, right? So that would apply to whether a thing is permitted or not permitted. But tara and tuma, this is a state of, it could be a person, it could be an object, okay? And of course, tuma is caused by various causes. One of the principal causes that we learned is tumas hames, in other words, that a dead person, right, automatically, if you're under the same roof with him, this is what we call an ohel, a tent, literally,
yeah,
but it means under the same roof, right? Or as we saw, even if you're under a tree where there's a body over there, and you come under the same tree, then in that particular case, automatically you become tomei. You don't even have to touch it,
yeah,
that's the point,
yeah,
but automatically it becomes tomei. So, how do you change tomei into tahor? So there are different ways, you know, depending upon what it is. One of them is, of course, through the mikveh, which I would say is a sine qua non in all of them, but for certain types, you actually have to go, have to have more than that. And what is that? It's the ashes of the red heifer. Remember? So you have to sprinkle it on the third day, or the seventh day. It all depends, you know. There are other reasons for tumah too. For example, coming in contact with a dead reptile that you touch, or something like that, or
disease.
A man.
How about disease? Depends.
Right. You're thinking of leprosy. Right. But even, let's say, a man has sexual intercourse with his wife or something like that. So for that moment, I mean, for that, the rest of that day, he's tubing, something like that. So, and if a person is tubing, so what? So we say that until, you know, he can be cleansed from it, as I said, through the mikveh, something like that. In that particular case, he remains in the state of tumah. Okay. But this could also apply to objects and to food, which might possibly also become tumah as a result of contact with an object that is itself
actually know about them,
right.
Like how the water, how about when the water was uncovered or the wine was
yeah,
uncovered?
Yeah, right, correct, correct. Right, right, right. If you let the water, say it uncovered overnight, so... But there's another reason. We were afraid that maybe a serpent came to take a drink and deposited its poison. So that's not really a case of Tarbet Tumay, but you can say. Well, that you can just spill out.
Yeah.
I am sorry, my throat is very bad again tonight.
You want some water?
Maybe a little bit. Or maybe I'll try again one of these candies.
I'll bring you some water.
Okay, so as I said, at this point, the discussion now switches to maybe the object became tobin. Okay? So, if that's the...
Which object are we talking about now?
It could be any object.
We're not talking about
but specific...
It
could be. It could be. In other words, if we take it, it's really part of a general question, okay? But since we're on this topic, Mishamshei, Avedis Kechovim, in other words, objects that are used in service of Avedis Zorah without being actually Avedis Zorah themselves, so, okay, so what happens? But it could apply in general to Caleb, okay?
Which line are we?
Okay. Let's see, where is it? Okay.
11th.
Yeah.
It starts with
a lama yote.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Rav Hamnuna Mishum Tuma Yeshona Kabbalayana. All right. He questions, what's going on. It happens to be an old tumah. In other words, the object became tumah before, right? And then after it became tumah, so what happened? It became damaged. Okay? You understand? I mean, you follow the picture right now.
Right.
Yeah.
It
okay.
Lost tumah and then it got damaged.
Then it got damaged, right. So now the question is, all right, I have to keep my eye on the place over here. Right, Dittanan, right, okay, as we have learned, there's a Mishnah in Kalim, okay, which says, clay matokles, in other words, metal vessels, right, shutehem and kablehem to meyim. Shutehem means really like the outside of them. And the kablehem and means the inner part, because the kablehem means, where it receives whatever contents you put into it, okay? As in the case of a cup, for example, the outside or the metal to begin with, and then what happens on the inside. So they became tameim, right? Nishtabu, and then what happened afterwards? They got broken. So what happened as a result of the breaking? Tiyut, taharu, they became tahor. Because what do we say? We say that now it's no longer a perfect kli, right? So that therefore the tumah has no value in this particular case. So it's as if it made it again into tahor. Okay? So far, so good. All right. Now, chozav ason kelim, right? Well, what happens now if he goes and he fixes them over and he makes them again into good kelim, right? So, yachzeru the tumah yishona, right? So then they should return once more and become tummy as they were before. Question is, it lost its tumah when it got broken.
Right.
But the minute that he fixed it up, lo and behold, it became Tommy all over again.
Okay.
Right.
This is about equal to the Torah Atamon.
The mystery behind
it.
The mystery. Right.
Right.
The Hocha Kibayalei, so the question actually that is being raised is Kihadra Tuma, right? Whether the Tuma has come back again. In other words, not everybody feels that it's, once it's broken and fixed up, why should it automatically become Tuma again? Maybe not. Unless, I mean, it comes again into contact, you know, it's something that makes it Tuma. But to say that it has to be go back again to Tuma Yeshona, to the old Tuma that existed, doesn't seem right. So, therefore, they make the following distinction. They say, Hane Mile Letuma Doraisa. In other words, if the Tuma was caused by something that the Torah itself specifically says will automatically make Tuma, understand? Then the object, if it becomes fixed again, automatically is going to have the tumor again. Because it's still the same object. It's been fixed, but it's still the same. But Aval, however, tumor de Rabbanon, lo. But if it's tumor, which is not by the Torah, but rather by rabbinical laws, because in many cases the rabbis extended biblical law in order to make sure that, you know, that there won't be any infringement upon biblical law, so they have extensions, right? So maybe it wouldn't apply. Oh, Dilmore, or maybe Leishna, maybe there's no difference. In either case, becomes Tummy again.
Doctor,
yes. The Torah specifically says, for example, that let's say, come in contact with a sheretz. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So that's Tuma Doraisa.
Okay.
Or Tuma Meis.
Right. Okay.
But Tuma the Rabbanan, for example, with certain foods, normally we say that the Tuma doesn't extend beyond a primary source or something like that. However, if it happens to be a holy food, in other words, truma or challah or something like that, then in that particular case, there is a stricter application. So, does the Torah say that? No. But it's the rabbis who decided that because it's a holy object, then in that particular case, you have to be even more careful. So this is the Tuma de Rabbanan.
If a little bit of the flour
you're
going to make matzah with, got a drop of water.
Yeah.
Is that an example?
Well, you need water in order to make matzah.
You know, what is it that you're not supposed to?
You have to be careful, you know, that once, you know, it has been formed.
Yeah.
That, you know.
That nothing fell.
Right.
So suppose at that point.
Yeah.
Of course, water.
Yeah. That doesn't make it tummy. It's not a question of tuma in that particular case. It's a question as to whether, whether you could use the matzo or not. That's a different story, right? Yeah. So that's why I said, I mean, mutar and osur, you know, permitted and prohibited, is not exactly the same as tuma, because it's a different category altogether. Yeah, right. Well, tuma loshua, maybe there's no difference. The tiboyele, shorter was rabbanan. So you can ask the following question about other laws of the rabbis where they claim, you know, that it becomes tuma. So he says, one from one, you have to ask a question. In other words, you have to go and discuss each case separately. Tumah d'Rabbanan mihadra or lo hadra? So, question, does Tumah d'Rabbanan, does it return to the object or not? So, im timtza leimar, if you want to say, lo hadra tumah, David is kechovim mishum, that, you know, that tumah does not come back again. Well, but maybe David is kechovim, mishum kumah David is kechovim, mishav yuha rabbonin, right? But maybe, because if we're talking about a kli that was used for the service of an idol, right, for idolatry, so in that case, because we want to be more strict in the case of the prohibition of idolatry, right, then we say that the rabbis made it ketumah d'oraisa, like tumah of the Torah, or no, or not. No, at this point I had this whirling. So the Gemara also says, take a, the question remains. In other words, it's undecided. Undecided. Boy, many Rabbi Yochanan, many Rabbi Yonai. So Rabbi Yochanan asked Rabbi Yonai, he says, Tikroves avedis kochavim shel ochlim mahu. If you bring food to give to an idol, so what? Tell me, what's the story there? Mi ma'anyele bitul v'tarvinu bitumu. So, if you nullify it, is that sufficient in order to make it tahor from its previous state of tumor? Oh no, or not? Viterboy lay Caleb, and the question arises with Caleb. What? Says Caleb. Says, lo kabayale. Why do you ask me a question? He says about Caleb. He says, Kavan the Islahu Taro Bemikveh. You know what you can do in order to cleanse it from tumor? Take it and you put it into the mikveh. Dip it in the mikveh. Table, right, exactly. That's what we mean. Right, yeah. So, dip it into the mikveh then. Tumah nami b'tailah. In that particular case, the tumah also becomes nullified, right? Not only does it make it clean, but it nullifies completely the. So, Kimabaye says, Lay, when you ask a question, says it's about ochlin, food. It's a boy, Lay, Avedis Kechovim, Gufa. So, why don't you ask a question about idolatry, real idolatry? Avedis Kechovim, Gufa, Lomibaye. So, why do I have to ask questions about idolatry? Everybody knows what the answer should be. Kavon, let's pick. Kavon the Yusura, Botil Tumor. And the Kavon the Yusura, Botil, inasmuch as we said before, that there's a possibility to take an idol and make it null and void, right? So automatically then, tumanapi nami betela. Then in that particular case, why can't we say then that automatically, whatever state of impurity it was, that's also bottled. It's also nullified. But the question still remains, if you actually bring food in order to serve it to idols. I don't have to tell you, remember the famous story about Abraham Avinu, right, that he told his father that they had a fight when the woman came bringing some tasty food, you know, to serve the idols. And Abraham Avinu, you know, chopped down the idols, right? When his father questioned him, he told him, well, this woman came and she brought the food, and guess what? The idols all had an argument as to who's going to get the food. They fought with each other, and that's why they're all broken. Right. Right. So, my what? So he says, Kevadi Surrey Le Bottle. So, you know, he says, food that you bring to the dead, the prohibition is not nullified. Get around Giddel. Huh? Not nullified. Not null. Not nullified. Right.
Not nullified.
Right.
What does
either bottle
mean? Every bottle. Every bottle,
is there
any connection?
Sure. It means that a person who is very, very old and is lost.
I know what bottle means.
Exactly.
But how is this
compared? So it means that he's passing on, and as a human being, he's just about nullified at this particular point. In other words. Right.
You talk about someone being able to bottle, it's usually
it's over there.
It's passing by, right. Right. I mean, the word has various meanings. It means also, for example, to be idle, not to work, or something like that. So that's also bottle. And for this we have a word.
The other one is fits better for the Iver bottle.
Yeah. We had the Gemara in the Megillah where they say, how do you know that you have a city? Because they have 10 batlonim. People who, you know, have nothing else to do but to come in to make a minion. So
now that's a word too, right, that they used to look for the batlonim.
Right.
In the
shekel. Yeah.
That word.
But very often it's just the derogatory sense. It wastes his time, or it's not doing any practical work or anything like that.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But
so,
yeah.
Yeah, correct. All right, so anyway, hello, yeah. All right, because Rav Gidl, who said that what? Tumanami le botla. Oy dilmo isadoraisa le botla. Tumanabona botla. Says, I don't know, he says, whether Tuma, even in the case of foods that were brought for Aveda Zori, says, they can't be nullified. Or maybe it's only if it is with a biblical prohibition that's true. But if it is a whereas if it's tumor, according to the rabbinical instructions, maybe it could be nullified. So at any rate, take them. It still remains unresolved. All right, now we come to a very interesting little maisa. Morris says, "Bar mini Rabbi Yossi ben Shul me Rabbi." Okay. The following question was asked by Rabbi Yossi ben Shul from Rabbi. Rabbi is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, of course. He says, "Kelim sheshim shubehem beveis chunyo, ma'u sheishtam shubehem beveis hamikdash." Here we have to go into a little history. Okay. History is that in the very early period of the return from Eretz Yisrael, when they established the Knesset HaGdolah and so on, and they had a very beloved Kohen Gadol by the name of Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon the Righteous, very pious, very highly respected, but he had two sons, and he wanted to appoint one son as the Kohen Gadol when he passed away. And the other one happened to be the popular choice. So since they got the other guy and not the one who was the popular choice, Chonyo, so Chonyo became very angry and decided to go to Egypt and to build a Beis HaMikdash over there in Egypt. So the question is, how legitimate was this temple that was put up in Egypt? and how legitimate were the Kahanim who went with Chanya over there? In other words, would Chanya still remain a real Kohen, or did he lose his kahuna as a result of establishing a Beis HaMikdash outside of Eretz Yisrael when it's not supposed to be? Okay, so now the question that he raises is as follows. Okay, this of course was at a later period already, but still he asked the following question. He says, okay, if this was an object that was used for the service in the temple of Chonya in Egypt, right? Can you use them in the real Beis HaMikdash? Okay? The Koma Bayilei Aliba Demandoma Beis Chonya La Beis HaMikdash. And this question would be in accordance with the opinion that says that the temple that Chonya built was not considered Avodah Zarah. In other words, it was considered an expression of Judaism and not of Edism. Needless to say, there is all the contrary opinion, right? That if you serve outside of Eretz Yisrael, you know, a Beis HaMikdash, I'm not talking about it making a shul, I'm talking about the Beis HaMikdash, the temple, when the Torah specifically says it has to be in the central sanctuary, namely the one in Yerushalayim, then maybe anything that you put outside becomes like a Avodah Zarah. I mean, you can ask a similar question historically, although they don't raise it over here, about the temples that were put up by Jeroboam, when he established two temples, one of them in Bethel, right? And the other one in Dan. In other words, the southernmost part of the northern kingdom and the most northern part of the kingdom. And in those temples too, were they worshipping Hashem or Islam? I mean, there's a question. Right. Yeah. Babylonia didn't make any temples, no. Yeah. Synagogues, yes, but not temples. Right.
But even the northern kingdom, that's where it was Israel, but they were not supposed to have the
correct. I mean, he set them up because he wanted to prevent Jews in the northern kingdom from feeling a sense of loyalty to Yerushalayim.
Right.
That's why.
And that's why the kings battled with each other.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Right.
Also, from a historical perspective, that even then the Jewish people were squabbling about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay, so let's do a couple of more minutes and then we'll continue with this story next week. Okay?
All
right.
Wow.
Yeah, right. So, as I say, the question was first raised then about the Kelim, right, that were used over there, whether you could consider them as Kelim, as Mishamshin, shall we say, those things that were used in the service of Hashem, or Avodah Zarah. How do you consider this based on you? Okay? And we saw one opinion says that it's not Avodah Zarah. So obviously, if one opinion says that, we have to have another opinion that says it is. Okay. So, the Tanan, as we have learned, says, Kohanim Sheshimshu Beveis Chonyo, Lo Yishamshu B'Mikdash Yerushalayim. Okay? Priests who served in the temple of Chonya do not serve in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. V'yeinu tzarech lomar l'dor acher. I don't have to tell you that if they actually serve a real idol, then of course they are prohibited. As for example, we had the times of the northern kingdom, you had priests who were serving Baal, Ashtoreth, and so on and so forth, right? So what kind of Kahanim were they? They were Kahanim for Avodah Zarah, they weren't Kahanim for... So would they be permitted to serve in Yerushalayim? Of course not.
Of course not.
Yeah. course they had been tainted by that. So, okay, so, anyway, the question is, right, right, so he says, Kahanim hu, the Kansin hu, Rabbonin. Still question that the Kahanim, right, were penalized by the rabbis that they were not allowed to serve. Mishum de b'nei deyonin, because Kahanim have knowledge, they have a mind. So in other words, if they serve, they know that they're serving, that they're doing wrong. They could have made a choice and do that which is right, not serve over there. Okay? But how about Abol Kalim? Lo, but maybe we'd say that inasmuch as the vessels themselves don't have a mind of their own, right? So they should not be disqualified. Or Dilma, or maybe Leshna, makes no difference whether it's Kalim or whether it's Kahanim. So Amalei, so he said to him, Asurim Hei, says, they are prohibited. I had a pasuk, he says, that I knew once upon a time, shechatnuhu, but I forgot what it is. So Espe, so they asked the following question. It says, Kol hakelim asher hizniach hamelech ochos b'malchusay b'malo hechinu hikdashtim. Okay. Ochos was the king, one of the kings of Yehuda, Malchus Yehuda, right, who turned to Avodah Zarah. Okay? Turned to Avodah Zarah. And then he was followed by Chizkiyah, his son. Chizkiyah was dedicated to the service of Hashem. Okay? So now the question that, occurs is, right, in the time of Ochos, what did they do with the things in the Beis HaMikdash? They used it for Avodah Zarah, right? That's what it means. Today, in Hebrew, the word means to neglect, but this is right. Yeah, but it doesn't make sense to translate it that way. Right, correct. When you see B'malo, when he rebelled against the Ben Shalom, so the time of Chizkiyo, what did they do? Heichanu v'hikdashtu, right? We got them prepared and we dedicated them. My love, Heichanudet Bilinu, Hikdashtel Tadishtel. So, and why two different words? So he says, we have to assume that Heichanu means, we prepared. How do we prepare them? By trifling them. There's your word, right? And Hikdashnu, that we then, Dagdishinu, we made them holy again. Okay? So Amalei, so he said to him, Baruch Ato L'Shamayim, Aydu Ben Yishalim, so the Benchon, he says, Shechazalto Li Avedasi, because you have returned to me what I lost. In other words, I forgot, but now you reminded me the interpretation that I wanted to give. So Heichanu, he says, you know what they did with those things that had been used in the days of Ochos for Avedah Zorah? Not that they titled them, but Sheganazum, right? It means actually that they went and they buried them so that they should never be used again, right? The Higdashnu, and we made them holy. And what did we make holy? Shehigdashnu Acherim Tachtim. Yeah, we made holy other vessels in their place. Okay.
Very interesting.
Right.
Now, do they have proof to back up your assertion, or?
Yes, yeah. I mean, first of all, it's a historical evidence, you see.
Their burial,
I can't tell you. But that's just,
this is the oral history.
Right, right. It's written and oral, it's a combination of both. Right.
Well, now it's written, but originally, the story must have come down
oral. Right, right.
two different stories.
Yeah, versions.
All right, well, I have a way of...
Okay, so, yeah, labor. So, shall we say, Messiah Le, Mizrachish Sephonis, Bogonzu Beis Hashmanai, Esabne HaMizbeach, Sheshikzu Anshe Yovan. There is a Mishnah called Midos, which describes what the Beis HaMikdash looked like, various sections of it, and so on, with the different rooms, and, you know, Midos, literally measurements, right, but it's Midos, right. So, one of the Mishnayos over there says that the Mizrachi Sephonis, in other words, the northeastern part of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, right? So, Bo Gonzu Beis Chashmenai, then the Chashmenaim, in other words, you know, the victorious Maccabees, after driving out the Greeks, they buried over there the stones of the Mizbeach, which the Greeks had, you know, made treif, made as shekets, right? It's a strong word, I mean, shekets means that I made an abomination by, you know, having, using it for idolatry.
What is it in its singular?
Are you talking about Yiddish or English?
Take your pick. What is it?
In Yiddish, of course, it becomes shiksa.
Oh, yeah, that's the word for abomination.
Right,
right. But in Hebrew, that's not quite right, okay? Shaketsa or something, I guess. I've never seen it used as an adjective, I'll be honest with you. But in Yiddish, yes. Shegetz, Shiksa, Shkotzim.
What is Shegetz?
What is the... it's a mispronunciation of the word Shakets. Shekets,
oh,
the
okay,
same thing. Shegetz, of course. Yeah. You know, certain words become, when people use them all the time, so they change their form slightly or something like that. But you can see the etymology of it without any problem. Okay. So it says, in that part of the Beis HaMikdash, in the north, the northeast corner, the Hasmoneans buried the stones of the altar which had been profaned by the Greeks. The Omer Rav Sheshes, and Rav Shesha says, because, you know, these stones of the altar had been dedicated to Avodah Zarah by the Greeks. Okay. All right, I think I'll stop at this point because I've just about run out of steam. But we'll continue. Okay, and tonight is the 6th of December in the year 2006. And we continue now in the middle of Avodah Zarah, Daf Nun Beis, Omid Beis. Omar Rapapa said, okay. Question is, of course, why did they bury the stones of the altar? Maybe they could have done something else with it, okay? In theory, the Greeks had defiled it, right? But maybe something could have been done, I mean, in order to make use of it again subsequently once the Greeks were defeated. Maybe there's some way of purifying it or something like that. I mean, this is what the question is.
Don't have purified it? I'm thinking of what the method that they used to use, you know, of the messer they wouldn't take. To stick it in the ground.
Yeah, with a messer. You do that with a knife.
With a knife.
With a knife, you can do it. Right.
So,
yeah,
you know,
we had that way back. Right. It's correct. Okay.
So I'm asking if there's anything about the burying itself that would make it.
Obviously, why do they want to bury it? They want to bury it so it should not be used again. But that's the idea. I mean, this is what we wind up with, you see. Okay. So, this was the question. Could it be fixed up in some way that they could use it instead of simply burying it for all time? So, Rapapa said that the Hosam Korah Ashkach Vedorash. They discovered a pasuk and they interpreted it as follows. What is the pasuk? The pasuk is Dichsiv. There is a verse in the Bible which says, it happens to be in the book of Yechezkel, in the book of Ezekiel, it says, Vo bo peritzim bechiluluha, that the robbers or the transgressors entered into it, meaning into the temple itself, and they profaned it. So the question is, I mean, once the Greeks had come in and they profaned it, then in that particular case, it meant that it could no longer be used for something holy. But again, we didn't solve the problem as to whether it was possible to reclaim it in any way. So that would be simply to say that once the Greeks defiled, you know, the altar by using it, so in that case it could not be used for divine purposes. So what could you do with it? So Amri, so they said, Echi David, what should we do with these stones? Nisparinhu, shall we break them into pieces? And then what? And reuse them, right? For the altar? But what does the Torah say about the altar? It says, Avonim Shleimos, Omar Achmona. Torah says that the altar had to be built with stones which were not hewn. Not hewn, remember, that we're not supposed to. Okay. So that's out. Nun Sarinhu. Maybe we could saw it in such a way to remove, you know, any of the imperfections. So the Torah says, "Lo sonim falehem bazel," as we indicated, you're not allowed literally to lift up iron in order to, you know, to cut them. Omar Rahman, the Torah said. Why? Maybe. Lisparinhu Vilishkalinhu Lanavshasayhu. Maybe what they could do with these stones is simply to break it up into little pieces, and since it had already been defiled by the Greeks, so, you know, maybe people.